Hello. It's November 28th, 2024. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you've had a great week so far and are looking forward to the weekend. And here in America, maybe you're looking forward to the Thanksgiving holiday that is today, actually. But today's episode, I'm going to go ahead and tell you that it does talk about an alleged crime against a child and other children. Therefore, listener's discretion is advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1999. And in the Washington port city of Tacoma, many people enjoyed a comfortable way of life. Meaning that many people were able to provide for themselves and their families without spending an arm and leg for a decent place to live. Like the state as a whole, Tacoma was surrounded by beautiful scenery, like the nearby Mount Rainier, where people did things like hike and ski. And if Tacoma natives were looking to do things a little more lively, they could always take an easy commute to nearby Seattle to find the nightlife they craved. However, on a cold winter's night in Tacoma in 1999, a dark cloud would cast over the city when one of the city's beautiful and tiny residents vanished. And it would leave many residents of Tacoma wondering where she was. In the following case, you'll find out who the young resident was, the investigation, and the sad aftermath in a case I title, Vanished Baby. On the night of Saturday, January 23rd, 1999, the New Frontier Lanes bowling alley on the west side of the city of Tacoma was packed with many families and friends trying their hardest to get the biggest score on the bowling lanes. That night, local resident Teresa English and her four children went to the bowling alley around 8:30 p.m., and they were later joined by around 12 extended family members. While Teresa and most of the family played on two bowling lanes, the younger family members, including her youngest child, 2-year-old Tika, played at the arcade. Reports state Teresa mostly followed Tika around the arcade as some of the others bowled. And at around 10:15 p.m., Teresa placed Tika on the driver's seat of the Cruisin' World game, where she held tightly to the steering wheel and pretended she was driving the car on the video screen. Around the same time, even though she was focused on Tika, Teresa turned her attention to her son, as it was his turn to bowl. When he was finished, she turned back to tend to Tika, but shockingly could not find her. Teresa looked around the arcade, but she saw no sight of her daughter. She then asked other family members who were helping watch all the children if they had seen Tika, but they said no. Teresa then went back to the arcade, looking in between each machine in case Tika was trying to play hide and seek. But she did not find her. Teresa then went to the women's restroom to try and find Tika. But again, Tika was not found. However, Teresa did find a cousin changing their baby's diaper. But she told Teresa she hadn't seen Tika either. By this point, Teresa and other family members helped look for Tika, with Teresa eventually going out of the door closest to the arcade, which was only 6 feet away from where she had last seen Tika, to try and find her. Reports state Teresa knew deep down Tika would not have gone outside because, for one, she was afraid of the dark, and two, she didn't have her coat on, and it was a rainy and cold night. However, Teresa went out anyway and screamed Tika's name, hoping she would meet her mother, but to no avail. Teresa went back inside, and his family members asked some of the guests at the bowling alley if they had seen Tika. Teresa went to an off-duty Tacoma police officer who was working as security at the bowling alley that night. The officer went around the building with Teresa to try and find Tika, and when they couldn't, the officer alerted the manager, and the manager made an announcement over the intercom to let patrons know a child was missing. However, since the bowling alley was packed, no one really heard the announcement as there was a lot of noise from bowling, kids screaming, and people cheering. The officer then called the police, and then they, Teresa, and the manager waited for them to arrive, hoping they would help find Tika and she would be reunited with her family. According to reports, Tika Latrice Lewis was born on July 4th, 1996, to Teresa English and Robert Lewis. And although she was born into a loving family with three siblings, reports state Tika's father, Robert, lived a somewhat troubled life, being in and out of trouble with the law. But Teresa, from all accounts, was very hands-on with her children, especially to her baby Tika. As she grew older, Tika was considered a quote-unquote mature child and a mama's girl, and she was known as a somewhat shy child, but she was close as a two-year-old could be to her older siblings. Reports also state that Tika's immediate and extended family frequently visited New Frontier Lanes. However, since she was too young to participate in bowling or play the more mature video games there, she still had fun, especially with the bright lights of the arcade. But now Tika was nowhere to be found. When Tacoma police arrived at the bowling alley, they immediately shut the building down with people still inside and launched an intensive search of the building and the surrounding area, which included a heavily wooded area and a residential neighborhood. As the police questioned guests that night, reports state they didn't receive that many tips. But reports also state that during the search for Tika, they spoke to a woman who told them she arrived at the bowling alley around the time Tika disappeared, and said that as she and her family were arriving, a dark-colored Grand Am almost ran her over as it was speeding out of the parking lot. She said it sped away so fast that the rear tires fishtailed, but she could not see who was driving or if there was a child in the car. Police also heard from a teen boy who'd been there that night and said he thought he saw a man following a little girl around the arcade area, but he didn't think anything of it because he thought the man and the girl knew each other. When asked by police to describe either one of them, the boy couldn't give a description of the girl he apparently saw, but he described the man as maybe being in his 30s with a mustache, shoulder-length brown hair, white, and he had a pockmarked face. He said he also was wearing jeans and a flannel shirt. With these two promising tips, police wondered if the man the teen saw was the same one who peeled out of the parking lot, but they couldn't connect the clues at that time. After some time had passed since the initial investigation and search for Tika, police interviewed or checked out every guest that was at the bowling alley that night. But after they hadn't gotten anywhere and Tika was still missing, they decided to expand the search further. According to reports, police used two cadaver dogs who led their handlers to the nearby wooded area, but police weren't able to follow the dogs' leads at the time. So they went back to questioning, this time to Teresa and her family. Teresa retraced her steps for them and told them her side of the story, as did Tika's extended family members. When the police asked Teresa about Tika's father, she told them he was incarcerated and had been in prison for some time, serving a 4-year sentence for theft. After the second round of questioning, Tacoma police realized the search for Tika was bigger than they thought and decided they need more backup. So they called the FBI and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to help in the search. Reports state hundreds of more officers got involved in the search, combing through a wide radius near the bowling alley. But by the next evening, there was still no sign of Tika. As the days went on since her disappearance, though, police and other agencies worked around the clock to find her. The Monday after Tika's disappearance, just to cover all bases, reports state Teresa voluntarily submitted 2 polygraph examinations about Tika's case, which she passed with flying colors. With these tests, detectives determined Teresa had nothing to do with her daughter's disappearance, and she was cleared as a suspect. Shortly after her last interview with detectives, though, Teresa pleaded with the public via nearby Seattle news stations for any information regarding where Tika was. After her plea was broadcast, more tips came to the police, but there were still no concrete leads. By Tuesday, police returned to do a thorough search of the bowling alley area. Reports state that after they brought the cadaver dogs again, this time, they located what appeared to be a rolled-up bundle of men's clothing that had been stashed inside a large bush. They determined from the condition of the clothes that they had not been outside in the elements for an extended period, and they were sent to be processed for evidence. The report also stated that the items found, including a navy blue wool coat with the initials IS, or JS, handwritten on the tag, a Columbia brand plaid flannel button-down shirt, and a pair of Lee brand off-white jeans. As detectives were waiting for results from the clothing, they felt they were mostly getting nowhere in finding Tika. So they worked with local news stations who, in return, worked with the popular TV show at the time, America's Most Wanted, to bring awareness to Tika's case. After the episode aired on January 30th, 1999, a week after Tika disappeared, several hundred tips came to the police. But again, the tips led nowhere. Also, the close of the crime lab yielded no results and could not be linked to Tika's case. As the days went on since Tika disappeared, even though more tips came in, Tika could still not be found and her case went cold. Teresa, however, continued to fight for Tika to be found alive and brought home. And around this time, she and her family posted several missing person flyers throughout the area. And she continued to make more frequent pleas via local news stations about any information about her missing daughter. Teresa even claimed that she believed someone took Tika to raise as their child. However, police believed by this point that Tika might be dead and that they were now trying to recover her instead of rescuing her. Reports also state that months after Tika went missing, the property next to the bowling alley was being demolished for a new development, and as it was being torn down, police zeroed in, hoping that any clues of Tika could be found, as they believed she was more than likely deceased and could possibly be found near the torn-down building. However, once the demolition was complete, there were still no signs of Tika. A short time after the demolition, reports state that a surprising call came to police from a woman who lived near Teresa, saying she was adamant she saw a little girl playing in Teresa's front lawn, and that it was Tika. Police rushed to the scene to confirm this accusation, but when they got to Teresa's home, Teresa explained that the little girl playing in the yard was Tika's sister, Tamika, and they looked a lot alike. With this confirmed, police dismissed the neighbor's tip and continued the investigation. As months went by again, leading to a year of her daughter missing, Teresa began holding vigils in the area, hoping Tika would be brought home, as she was still convinced Tika was still out there alive. However, Tika's case garnered no new leads, and her case went cold again for years. Reports state, though, fast-forwarding to 2006, Teresa hired a private detective to help her in the search. One report states that after starting their search, the detective got word about a girl living in an RV park in Dallas who looked almost exactly like Tika and looked to be about what her age would be then, which would be around 10 years old. The private detective made their way to the RV park, and after spotting the girl, he too became convinced she was Tika and alerted Dallas police. However, Dallas police weren't so sure, especially since the girl in Dallas had different birthmarks than Tika. However, the PI took it a step further and contacted the FBI, who ordered DNA testing so they could be sure. And after the testing was concluded, it was determined the girl was not Tika. Back in Tacoma, by January 2008, cold case detectives continued to work on Tika's case and even offered a $27,000 reward for any information. Reports state that around this time, detectives combed through all the tips that had come in during the earliest days of the investigation, and they were certain that someone must have seen the person who took Tika from the bowling alley. Also, detectives came up with the idea to try and get some pictures of Tika from Teresa to put back out to the community to try and receive some tips. Teresa gave them a home video of Tika that had been taken at a family Christmas celebration just 28 days before Tika went missing. And with this, detectives hoped seeing Tika in action would jog someone's memory about something they might have seen back in 1999, and they provided the video to news stations to broadcast. However, still, no real leads came in. As years went on, some tips trickled in about Tika's disappearance, but again, nothing concrete came in of these tips. Cold case detectives continually pleaded their cases and appealed to the public for more information. By 2012, detectives in Tika's case found some information from the bowling alley years before that they could possibly use during the investigation. According to reports, detectives unearthed a case about the mother of a 6-year-old boy who stopped an attempted abduction of her son at the bowling alley just a few weeks before Tika's disappearance. Curiously, the boy had been playing in the same arcade while his mother sat and watched him from a short distance away. The mother later told police she noticed a man lean over and say something to her son while grabbing his hand. Then she leaped up and ran over to her son. And as she got close, the man tried to explain that he was the child's father. With fellow guests and security guards' help, the mother confronted the man and he was escorted out. But the man was not arrested, even though a report was filed by the mother. Detectives also came across a case from November 1998 that stated a man who participated in a bowling league at the bowling alley brought his 4-year-old son with him that night. Just like the previous boy and Tika, the 4-year-old was playing in the arcade when he decided to take himself to the restroom. Reports state that a few minutes later, another guest entered the restroom and found the boy lying on the floor in one of the bathroom stalls. And he had been sexually assaulted by a stranger. After the boy was found, his father was alerted and he told the security guards about what happened. The boy told the guards and his father that it was a man who assaulted him and he was white with curly brown hair. The day after the incident, the boy's father called Tacoma police to follow up on the case. But to his shock, he learned the security guards never called the police, so he reported the crime himself. Lastly, cold case detectives came across a case that occurred on the same day as Tika's disappearance. According to reports, this case took place at Tacoma's Oakland Madrona Park, which was less than a mile away from New Frontier Lanes. At around 2 p.m. that day, a man took his 2 children there when he saw a man near the bathrooms motioning for the children to come with him. The father chased the man off, and the kicker? The police report states the father said after he chased the man off, he sped off in a blue 1995 Grand Am. The same brand of car the woman from the night Tika disappeared said almost ran her over. The father also described the man as a white male with brown hair, and he was wearing a baseball cap. Reports state the father did not call the police right away, but called them 2 days later after he saw something in the newspaper about Tika's apparent abduction. To cold case detectives, they were taken aback. For one, it appeared that these incidents were likely related. The suspect description was consistent in each one, and the man in question apparently had access to a Grand Am, similar to what the witness reported seeing speeding away from the bowling alley. But despite making a possible connection between the incidents, the suspect remained unknown, and no one seemed to be able to identify him. As more time went by, detectives searched the homes of previously convicted child predators in the area, and even used cadaver dogs on one convicted man's property. But nothing came from the search. As years went by, even without finding Tika or a viable suspect, police theorized a white man in his 30s or 40s at the time, with curly brown hair, abducted Tika from the bowling alley that night. However, they were unsure if they drove a Grand Am. After 20 plus years had passed since the disappearance of Tika, Teresa told reporters, quote unquote, "If this man is the person who took Tika, I know that she is most likely dead. I have held on to the hope that someone abducted Tika to raise her as their child, but realize that she was most likely taken by a child predator who killed her. I will not stop looking for her, and I still hope to be able to bring her home, whether she is alive or dead." The story of the disappearance of Tika Lewis comes from the sources of the Charlie Project, the News Tribune, the Seattle Times, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, so that one, that episode really hit me hard. Well, not hard, but made me kind of sad. I guess it did hit me hard because anytime I read about a missing child, especially a child near my age, even though Tika was a little younger than me, it still makes me very sad, especially since it's still uncertain what happened to Tika. And I don't know what to say, whether or not, do I know if she's dead or not, or what do I think? No one knows if she's alive or dead. I'm hoping she's still alive, and like her mother, I do apologize, there's a car in the background, sorry you all, but like her mother Teresa mentioned, I wonder if someone did abduct Tika to raise as their own, but with the suspect being alleged a man, usually you don't hear about men abducting children to raise on their own. A lot of times from what I've read, when men abduct children, it goes really, really wrong. And unfortunately, they may be unfortunately killed. As many of you and I have seen in these cases, I'm not saying women don't kill their kids, because obviously that's not true either, or women don't kill abducted kids, because that's not true. But statistics show that men abductors do seem to do the most when it comes to children, and it goes left. And if that's the case with Tika, which I hope not, because no one really knows what happened to Tika or who took her or where she went, we would hope the best that Tika is alive today, and she would be in her late 20s, early 30s, and hopefully she was not harmed. She was taken. If that's what all the signs are leading to, she was taken. But if that were the case, again, we don't know. She was taken or something got lost, or obviously she didn't run away because she was only 2.5 years old, but she got lost and something bad happened. Or if she was abducted and taken, we can just only hope she was raised by someone who raised her as their own. But this case reminded me, I don't know if you all remember, but last year I did a case on a missing little girl named Lenora Jones, who went missing in 1995 and still in Tacoma. So, you know, I was wondering maybe if these were connected, but her case is a little bit more suspect because a lot of signs pointed to a family member with Lenora, not with Tika. Now, I'm not saying the same thing didn't happen, but I just made it, you know, just kind of put the correlation together. Maybe something happened between Lenora and Tika's cases, but probably not, because Lenora went missing in 1995, Tika went missing in 1999. So a four-year gap probably wouldn't correlate the same suspect. But, you know, just made me think about it. But I do believe the suspect is correct, because with the few tips that the police received, the suspect was always named as a white male who was white, brown hair, curly brown hair, and wore flannel, and possibly drove a Grand Am. But no one could, you know, pinpoint if he drove that Grand Am or not. But I found it suspicious that the person, the father at the park who had the children, and the woman who said she almost got ran over, the person drove a Grand Am. So it wouldn't be far-fetched as well with that tip. But my question is, like, how could she be gone in so quick of time? I know that may sound dumb, but, you know, she was apparently, from what Teresa told the police, she was gone within a flash. She literally went to look at her son bowl, went back to go tend to Tika, and she was gone. Like, that was a matter of minutes, just to, like, under 5 minutes, according to Teresa, and she was gone. And I'm like, were there no other kids in the arcade? Were there no other adults in the arcade? Just seeing this child go to vanish, to wander off, to be taken? You know, that's something I just flabbergasted with. That may be kind of corny, but, you know, she was gone within a flash. And I couldn't tell if the arcade was empty, because according to reports, the bowling alley was full. But there had to have been other kids and adults in that arcade. And I mean, unless that person was skilled, like, how could she vanish? How could that person take Tika if she was taken that fast? Because I just don't see it, especially if there's other adults around or kids around, somebody, even if they're other little kids, like as tiny as Tika was, they would have alerted somebody, I believe, like, oh, someone's taking Tika, or this little girl, or, you know, mommy, daddy, look, you know, something. I don't know, unless some parents or adults did see and wanted to mind their business, which would be sad. I don't know, but I just find it very, very strange that if the bowling alley was packed, like reports state, the arcade probably was packed too, or had enough people to see that Tika wandered off out the door or somewhere in the arcade or in the bowling alley or was taken by someone. I don't know how no one could see that. I don't get it. I don't know. But I'll also say, when the cadaver dogs found the clothes in the bush near the bowling alley, I thought that would be a lead, because one of the tips came in saying the man was wearing a flannel, and there was a flannel found in the bush along with jeans. Jeans are found in the bush. I just don't, you know, I thought there would be a correlation. I thought there would be some testing that would come back with a suspect, but it didn't. But I do find it strange that a whole outfit was in the bush. And that makes me think that whoever wore these clothes probably has something to do with Tika's disappearance. I'm not sure, but it would make sense to me. I don't know. Another site also said, sorry, you guys. Another site I also saw said that Teresa had asked a family member to watch Teresa. They got distracted and Tika was gone. I hope I said that right. But Teresa did ask, apparently, from another site, another family member to watch Tika. They got distracted. And like I said, Tika was gone. I don't know how credible that source is, but I did see that somewhere on another site. But I'm not sure. But from what I read from more of the sources, it was Teresa who was tending her own child, looked at her son bowl, went back, Tika was gone. And also another site, I don't want to say this, but I will, because it's not coming from me. It's from some other people on blogs and another site, thinking that maybe something more sinister, closer to home, happened with Tika. They're insinuating that maybe another family member had something to do with Tika's disappearance. That's obviously not credible right now. I can't find any source or anything to support that statement. I don't think that really makes sense either, but there's a lot of questions, unanswered questions, no answers. We can only hope, like I said, Tika is alive and well. And that's it. Thank you for listening to this episode of 90s Crime Time, and I hope it piqued your interest. If you like this episode and have not done so, however, I would love a rating, good or bad, on this episode or any other episodes of 90s Crime Time. Like I said all the time, I do try my best. I've been doing this for years, but I always try to get better. And I know my show and my voice isn't for everyone, but again, I do try. Again, I apologize for the weak release schedule. I'm trying to be better going into the next year. You can also follow 90s Crime Time on Instagram, where I frequently post other 90s stories, primarily on the weekend. And I have also joined Threads. If you are on Threads, you can follow me, 90s Crime Time on Threads. With that, stay safe and healthy. Enjoy the Thanksgiving weekend, if you are, or the week, if you are in America. And I'll see you very, very soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.